is the Day Zero update for June 21st, 2020. I'm Fully Loaded Alpha.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dandra Victoria.
And to all the dads out there, happy Father's Day. Almost didn't do a show because we almost didn't have enough people to do a show, but we're here. we got some stuff to talk about this week. It's been kind of a quiet week, I'll say. Just
another reason we almost didn't have a show.
Yeah.
But yeah, we found some stuff, and well, as it turns out, it was this kind of big deal of a game release that happened this week. So yeah, we'll talk about that later in the discussion topics. So before we get there, let's get into what we've been playing this week. And for me, a lot of the same. So I'll focus more on MAME, because I've just kind of been going through some of the stuff in there, and MAME is a really wonderful piece of software. I'm just going to point that out there, because it's kind of like an archive of video game history, really, because that's what they're trying to be. I'm playing some gems in there, like, it still seems criminal to me that we never got a proper home version of Outrunners.
Yes.
That game was phenomenal. It was like one of the real first, you know, true sequels to Outrun, and we never really got it here. We got that bastardized port by Data East, which was may or may not have been outsourced developed. We don't know. Apart from that, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, we haven't had a good port of that. Which is a shame, because that's a really good, you know, three-player beat-em-up. What else have I been playing? Oh, yeah. Die Hard Arcade.
Yes.
Which is a really good game, and, kind of fits along with the Streets of Rage style. Could have actually ended up being the Streets of Rage sequel if Sega, had wanted it.
Was that game always, like, tied to the Die Hard license, or
no,
was that
it was,
just a Western
that was
thing?
Just That was a Western thing. Basically, Dynamite Deca was Die Hard Arcade over here, and Dynamite Deca 2 was called Dynamite Cop.
Yeah. So yeah, the Die Hard license kind of got added closer to the end, and it was really kind of shoehorned in, but they didn't really have to do very much because it just kind of fit.
Are going through a skyscraper, much like original film, so yeah, it worked.
Yeah, it worked. Although, combat in the original film wasn't quite as elegant as it was in Die Hard Arcade, but okay. So,
or as varied.
Yeah. So,
I also noticed that a lot of the influence of that game ended up in Streets of Rage 4, because it has that whole anything that is not nailed down is a weapon mentality.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that was a good game on that old, Sega Saturn, STV, Sega Titan V hardware. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. Also played a little bit of some very obscure Technosoft shooter called Hyper Duel. Apparently quite rare on the Saturn, but I saw a video about it on YouTube and thought, let's see if I have that on the MAME, and I did. And it's a lot like Thunder Force, but yeah, it's kind of like a cross between Thunder Force and Macross, because your ship can change into a mech, and you have directional shots, and it's a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah, if you want to look for a copy of that on for the Sega Saturn, it was kind of a late release, so it didn't get very wide distribution, so copies of that tend to go for quite a bit. Not that I have any intention of ever buying one, because I don't have a Saturn to play it on, so emulation it will be for me. So there's that. And that's kind of it. I really like MAME. I like what they're doing. I wish they kind of put more effort into some of their drivers. Like, the Naomi stuff really doesn't work. It boots, and that's, it kind of shows images, but it's way slow. Which, is kind of a bummer, because there are other emulators out there, like Demul, that can run the Naomi stuff just fine. So, it's all that matters. It seems to be, like, because they're, more focused on the classic stuff, they tend to just, their goal is more to just get stuff in there and at least kind of running for preservation, and they're not really too concerned about getting it perfectly playable. That can come later. So, yeah. But it's a great project. I love it. And if you guys haven't checked out MAME, yeah, it's really good. And a full MAME installation with all of the, if you're limiting yourself to an arcade set, is about 65 gigabytes.
It's actually less than I would have expected.
Yeah, it's pretty big. no, wait a minute. No, it's more than that, because I forgot to figure in the CHD files all for the hard drive images and stuff like that, which is quite a bit more.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seemed like a really low ball total.
My ROMs directory is 568 gigabytes. That's a little
that's
bit
more like it.
Yeah, that's a bit more than the 68. That's like 500 more. So, yeah. Also, before I pass on to Pat, I just want to say that Street Fighter II hackers are fucking insane.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
They're
absolutely out of their mind.
There's just some stupid insanity in there, and it's brilliant and also completely broken. So
I blame Marvel.
Yeah. So over to you, Pat.
Phantasy Star Online 2. This is probably the longest my PS4 has ever been shut off, because I've been focused on playing games over on the Xbox One. And this could be the centerpiece of my gaming for quite a while. It would be hard to review it, because the simple text of it would be, it is fucking PSO. But that works really well still, like 20 years later. And it's just getting started over here, but I'm definitely looking forward to seeing where they go with it. And it's so fundamentally different from Final Fantasy XIV that the two games really complement each other really well. And yeah, I've said this before, but it's free to play without being exploitative. And that's a difficult balance to strike.
Let's just say you're talking to somebody who's never played PSO and you try and get them interested in it. What's your 30-second elevator pitch on PSO2?
I would probably liken it to a Zelda Four Swords type of game, but based on 3D Zelda rather than 2D.
Okay.
And with semi-randomized dungeons, because the maps are always the same, but the routes that you have to take through them differ, just like in the first PSO. But again, if we're talking about no pre-existing knowledge, with PSO2, you've got kind of an infusion of fighting game mechanics in the mix. Clearly, there were Guilty Gear players on the team. Probably some Third Strike fans, because the katana style actually has a parry, which is fun. Because you can parry shit that you absolutely have no business parrying, like stampeding dragons.
Okay.
Yeah. Nothing is unblockable in this game. But, that's really the gist of it. It's just a really fun kind of dungeon crawly co-op game that you can play in as small or large doses as you want. And it's a formula that worked back in 2000, and it still works brilliantly today.
Yeah. If it ain't broke.
Yep. So okay. That's the best pitch I can come up with on the spot like that. But yeah, if you've got a PC that can run it, or if you've got an Xbox One sitting around, you know, it costs you nothing to give it a shot. And yeah, it'll probably be on my game of the year list, honestly.
Cool.
All right. As for me, primarily, at least for the last couple of days, it's been The Last of Us Part 2, but up to that point, I had been, you know, taking advantage of my PS Now subscription, so I had been playing Red Faction Guerrilla, which is, well, it's Red Faction Guerrilla. It's one of the most cathartic experiences you'll ever have in a game. For those who've never played the Red Faction series before, it's a franchise from Volition, the Saints Row people. And part of the Red Faction's sort of whole appeal is its geomod system, where in the original games it allowed you to basically modify the terrain through pure destruction. So, you know, you come across like a locked door, and since the game mostly takes place in an underground mine, you come across a locked door. You may not be able to find a key, but there is a mole tank nearby that you can use, and why try to unlock a door that you can't unlock when you can just make a new one right next to it? The Red Faction Guerrilla doesn't actually have that particular feature as far as terrain goes, but it does have a modified version when it comes to actual buildings. So you can basically all the buildings in the game are completely destructible, and they are basically like, if your whole point is to bring down a entire building, what you have to do is you have to find ways to lessen its stability so that it, you know, collapses in on itself. So usually in the game, that usually involves you taking your sledgehammer and basically just punching holes into the side of the thing until, you know, its foundations have weakened to the point that it collapses in on itself because of its own weight, or using something like charges, which are, you know, just basically remote detonated bombs that you can put on the side and just blow holes and things. It's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it to anybody who has not played it. And that game was like a PS3 game, and yet it still holds up very well.
They remastered it recently, so.
That's the version I'm playing. The only problem with it is that, well, like I said, part of the point of the game is trying to, you know, take down buildings, but on the flip side, if you're too close, well, you take damage.
Well,
because a whole building is collapsing in on you, and that kills people. So
it tends to, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I've been playing. So, Chris, what about you?
Besides The Last of Us Part 2, I streamed on Thursday Box Boy plus Box Girl, because that was part of the recent sales that Nintendo had on their Switch eShop. And that game holds up pretty well. It's largely has a lot of stages from the 3DS games. And I've been playing through like a lot of the early stuff there, so kind of getting the tutorial introductions for the various mechanics in it. And not too hard, just trying to you're generally trying to get through the stages as efficiently as you can with your character, who kind of sprouts boxes at one of the four cardinal directions once you start sprouting them out, so they can be used early on as just like stepstones to get across gaps or over up to higher ground, that kind of stuff. But then you eventually get to the point where you can use them as like grappling hooks to get up higher, or like a snake teleportation kind of mechanic through tighter corridors that you can't necessarily get through easily yourself. And it's a lot of really inventive mechanics to take something that's fairly simple early on to something that's a bit more intensive as far as like having to figure things out. And I think one of the last worlds I took on in that stream was one where they essentially have these areas full of dirt, which you can use your blocks to like break up, but you have to be careful because you cannot use them to pull up onto in the way that like solid ground is. So you have to be kind of thinking ahead, like, okay, I need to clear out these spaces so that I can get up to, you know, have enough room to get to this next area, that kind of stuff. So you're kind of doing a lot of moves to free yourself up for future moves. A lot of thinking ahead with that stuff, and that works really well. They also have a two-player mode that kind of changes the levels a little bit, but it's largely all the same stuff. It just changes them slightly so that you need two characters and potentially like two sets of boxes to get through some of these areas. They let you play that solo or with a second person, so you can have like added challenge by yourself, or you know, play with somebody else and kind of work together for that. That all works well. And they just have a lot of cosmetics that you get, because for beating each of the stages and getting under these certain tiers of boxes used, you get currency, two different currencies. You can use that to buy up some bonuses or buy up cosmetics, which you do in like a gacha machine. So it kind of doles them out a little bit slowly, but it works out pretty well for the most part. You get these like silly cosmetics to dress up both Box Boy and Box Girl. And also been playing Rocket League some more, working on the missions that they put out the past couple weeks here, and getting into a pretty good groove there as far as winning a bit more than I have been of late. So that's been good. And I played some Persona 4 Golden on the PC on Steam, and managed to get past at least most of the issues I've had. So initially I had an issue where it was just displaying the wrong button prompts, where it was just displaying like these generic PC button prompts, not even like Xbox specific ones. And despite using a DualShock 4, I had to go and turn off some Steam input options in the big picture mode. That got that working. And then the other one was that there was no audio or background music, like voice audio or background music. So when I go to set up, you know, to autoplay, as it goes through like the intro and all that, it just goes boom, 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 right all through the story. It took me a while to figure out that it didn't like not being on my C drive. I don't know if there was a folder on there that had nothing in it. So I don't know if the game was somehow like trying to draw that audio from that folder, but it was still playing like cutscenes in the rest of the game just fine. It was just that audio just wasn't there, and it was like freaking out. So I had to move it all to the C drive, and it started working correctly. So I'm still fairly early in that. Beat Yosuke's boss, an easy one though, but basically about to the point where it's going to start getting into the main meat of the game, whereas just being a lot of story stuff there. But that's been pretty much it. How about you, Dan Reb?
Yeah, so last week I was at a bind because I didn't really know what to play. I just wanted to make sure I was ready for The Last of Us Part 2. That said, on Monday I went ahead and popped in the original Last of Us. And I knew I had The Last of Us Remastered, but I only remember playing it to get some footage for Left Behind, because we featured it in one of our videos. And then when I went to my shelves, I was like, oh, I have The Last of Us Remastered, but it's unopened. I guess I played the PS3 version or whatever. And then I was like, it's not the PlayStation hit, so I'm not going to open it, because we had The Last of Us for free in October last year. So I went ahead and downloaded that, played through that, and I beat it in about 3 days. And considering, you know, it's already an experience I already had, I wasn't, like, shocked about anything that happened. But it's definitely really cool to experience a second time. And after that, like, I knew I was ready, because, like, the main reason why I wanted to play was so I can get a handle on the controls again. Because after watching some preview content, I was scared that I'd suck in the gameplay. But we'll talk about that later. I also picked up Ring Fit Adventure. A lot of the sites have restocked, so Best Buy, Amazon, GameStop have all seen restocks, but as soon as Wario64 or T-Pass Gamer posts about it, it becomes sold out within 5 minutes. Luckily, I was able to grab a couple off Best Buy, and the only reason why I bought two was because I added it to the cart, and nothing happened. And then I added it to the cart again, nothing happened. So I chose immediate checkout. And when it checked out, it charged me for two. So I was like, okay, cool. I told my friends. It turns out one of them was interested, so I went ahead and got rid of it immediately. So I didn't lose any money there. And that's cool. I could have resold it, but, you know, I'm not that kind of person for, like, I'll sell games, but I don't, like, flip them immediately. Normally, I'll, like, sell the collector's edition, like, a few years down the line. But that's about it there. And so when I played it, I'll tell you that the Rincon is a really nicely designed product. It has a lot of resistance. So in the game, you'll actually be pulling on it to perform a certain task or pushing on it, or squeezing on it. And it feels really durable. I have no qualms with the ring at all, except that the two handles are made out of some sort of foam, or I think you can wash it, but, like, considering you're going to sweat a lot when you play this game, it's probably going to smell after a while, so there's that. But anyway, the main reason why I bought it, aside from the fact that it's rare now, and I'll have no access to the gyms until God knows when, is the fact that in the last Nintendo Direct, which was actually a long time ago, they announced DLC for, like, a Rhythmic Media video game or Rhythmic mini games, and I'm a sucker for that stuff. Like, they just announced a Kingdom Hearts rhythm game, like, earlier this week, and I'm like, I don't care about Kingdom Hearts, but I want to play that game. So with this, basically, it gives you some songs to play with, and a couple of the songs they include the Breath of the Wild medley and Jump Up Superstar from Mario Odyssey, and it's been a blast playing those. And then I got into the regular RPG mode, which is actually pretty cool. It's super positive. Everything you do is physical. So you run in place in order to get through a level. All the levels are on rails, so there isn't really any exploration aspect. And then when you get into a random battle, you go ahead and perform certain exercises to attack your enemies. So one of them is the squat. Another one is the overhead shoulder press. And then another one is basically you sit down and try to bring your legs in. I think it's a knee press, a leg press, or whatever. And it's all really intuitive. It tracks your form using the gyroscope in the Joy-Cons. And yeah, it's just really impressive. So this is probably the best thing I've seen the Joy-Cons actually used for. And I've only played it for about 2 days, and the second day I only played for about 15 minutes as opposed to the hour the previous day, and I was more tired just off of bumping it up one difficulty setting. Mm-hmm. So on days where I don't run, I'll go ahead and play Ring Fit, and, you know, I doubt I'll see anything as far as, like, you know, weight loss changes, but as far as, like, making my form better, doing certain workouts, or tiring various parts of my body that I don't typically use in a typical day, it definitely gets the job done there. So, yeah, Ring Fit's actually really, really good, and I look forward to playing it some more. And then lastly, there's been Animal Crossing, and that's been just daily stuff. Nothing new to report there. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll get into The Last of Us Part 2, which is, well, it came out this week. It was probably one of the most contentious releases that I've seen in a good while.
Yeah.
The opinions of it seem quite varied. Some people think it's the best game ever. Some people think it's just too much. So let's start with what is probably the least contentious thing about the game, and that's probably the gameplay. Has it actually improved since the original?
I certainly think it has. The combat in particular is not quite as precarious as the first one.
Yeah, having just played through The Last of Us, like, my major kind of criticisms were that the stealth, being able to sort of deal with clickers and runners and all that while being stealthy was unwieldy at times, especially as you're in cover and, like, watching them kind of go around corners to the point where you should be able to grab them, but the prompt kind of doesn't always show up in the way that you kind of expect, because it's kind of really picky with the way it does certain things. And melee can also be a big issue because you don't always lock on to dudes the way you expect with that. So there's tons of times where a dude was coming up to me with a weapon. It's like, all right, I'll hit him with mine first. And then we're both swing and miss each other a couple times before I finally get the right angle that they lock on, and that kind of thing. And so far from what I've played a few hours in, that is much better. The stealth especially, they've done a much better job of kind of making it feel like you have it's more lenient to it, but I think that's also probably through helping with all the accessibility options, kind of being a little bit more forgiving for things without necessarily trying to be like a hardcore stealth game in a way. So, and the guns stuff, well, there hasn't been too much so far for me. It definitely works pretty well, and they do a good job with that stuff so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, part of what makes the combat a whole lot better to me this time around is in its stealth. With the original game, first of all, both games do a fantastic job with sound design. Naughty Dog deserves a total round of applause for that. But the main thing was my complaint with the first game was because you have, when you're Joel and you have Ellie around, a big emphasis is put on sound. And in order to like really sneak up on enemies, especially the clickers and stuff, is, you know, you can go ahead and sneak up in front of them, and then you can go ahead and like do a stealth kill from there. And in the first game, Ellie is running around a lot and like yelling mm-hmm. fuck and all that stuff, and I'm like, how did the clickers not hear you? You should be dead. It wouldn't result in a much harder game, but that just didn't feel that realistic in that regard. And the second one, they've shut up a bit. There's an emphasis on melee strikes just because, you know, it's an action survival game and there aren't a whole lot of resources to go around. Mm-hmm. So the enemies will surround you and they're better at that. But mm-hmm. also your partners will also tell you, hey, on your right, you're being flanked and that sort of stuff. And that really, really helps, especially if you're not playing with headphones and you can't deal with where enemies are actually at. It definitely helps in that regard. I guess the main thing, I don't know, even know if it's really a complaint because it might be an actual realization of its design, is it feels a whole lot easier than the original game as far as like actual combat goes. I went into the game being, or I don't even know if you've gotten this far, but eventually you'll come across dogs, and mm-hmm. dogs can track you with scent. And yeah, that scared me because most of the time when I play these games, I'm just hiding. And hoping that the enemies come to me and they die that way. The dogs will smell you and they'll find you and then they'll kill you from there if you let them. So, you know, my strategy there has been like killing the dog, and that's actually been really, really easy. The hard part is actually watching Ellie or whoever you use actually kill the dog. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's crying now. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Ellie is very physical with their kills, especially when you get behind runners or clickers or whatever, and she's like, strangling them and then like slitting their throats as she's, you know, laying them on the ground. And it's like, Jesus Christ. Because if you played The Last of Us, being a 14-year-old girl, she's very much like jumping on their shoulders and like stabbing them a bunch of times, making lots of noise so that you kind of out yourself, usually, even if you're trying to be stealthy in the first game.
Yep.
She very much has her skills down here. And at least so far, I'm kind of happy there's no Shiv, because she just has her magic knife, pocket knife that never seems to break or anything. And you can use that as melee if you don't have a specific melee weapon.
Yep.
But it's generally not the greatest, and you have like a dodge move that is definitely welcome when enemies are lunging at you, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that dodge move is great.
Yeah, you can dodge around and kind of get some hits in. And yeah, I really like when you're with like Dina and you run a pot, like two clickers or runners or whatever, and you kind of do the "I'll take this one, you take that one" with her. So she's much more useful than Ellie generally was in the first game. Mm-hmm. Later on, she got much more useful. You got a gun and all that, and yeah, so that stuff kind of definitely helps make a big improvement. Mm-hmm. On just the way that combat feels and flows, and the way you have the ability to kind of view a situation before you jump in. And I also like the way they've improved the listen mode, where the original, They just showed you outlines of everything, so you knew right away, okay, there's two clickers here, there's like three runners, and maybe one of those Goliaths. Mm-hmm. And here, they're just white blobs, so you kind of have to specifically like go look around and see, like, okay, that's a clicker. And as they get closer to you, it's a more defined shape, but it's not mm-hmm. like a specific shape. So you know, like, okay, there's some faint ones here. Those ones I probably don't have to worry about it, but kind of definitely need to get around. And they also have the, if you're like taking out a clicker and like one, like a runner is like walking around, you kind of get this little, not really a meter, but it can be a meter if you're being too sloppy with your stealth and shows them like, oh, this one's seeing you. You know, you're hoping it hurries up so you can kind of get back into cover, that kind of stuff. Where, like in the grocery store, on the stream, I had already gone through this scenario in the grocery store, but I took out one of these enemies and I was just like, all right, I'm going to wait for this runner to stumble around here, and then was like screwing around too much and was just standing there as it was looking at me and got everything on me at once because I wasn't just paying attention too much on that stuff. But I assume with the accessibility, you can kind of turn all that stuff off if you want to be more intuitive kind of stealth HUD stuff. But yeah, it's the stealth stuff definitely works really well with this game. And I really like that grocery store section because it shows that the way they've improved on a number of the mechanics, especially like the safes. Whereas mm-hmm. in the original, you just had like, okay, there's a safe, so there's a piece of paper somewhere that has a code on it.
Yeah.
And you just went and go find that. And it's, this one here, it's like, it's a message from one person to the other. It's actually not listing a code. Mm-hmm. It's saying like, okay, so the code is when you're a good boy, one employee of the month. And you're like, what the fuck is this mean? And like, it's a little office, so you got to look around. And like, what? Employee of the month? Okay. And you find the board and you're like, okay, good boy. There's some boys on here. You know, it's, oh, there's one of these months is a dog.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm guessing this is the good boy. Mm-hmm. You have to go ahead and enter in the code. You luckily don't have to, like, spin the thing. You just have to enter in the code.
Yeah.
Like, I just got through the Seattle gate where you got to, if you are looking around enough, you found a piece of paper that has, like, here's all the codes for the gates, the various gates. It's like, oh, this is poor security. Mm-hmm. But for you, you have to enter in the code there to get through that. And it's like, all right, this stuff is, like, more adventure-y than, like, the original was.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of here's the opening to the next area. I have to just go through there. Maybe I have to find a ladder or a thing to push around, that kind of stuff. But this time around, it's a little bit more adventure-y, more encouraging of exploration and all that kind of stuff.
That's really what drives the gameplay for me and keeping me motivated to play is its focus on exploration. Like, Naughty Dog does a good job at, like, faking openness when it comes to exploration because they pretty much have a golden path of what to do. It's the same case with The Last of Us, the original, and the second, but there's a specific part in the game where it's specifically an open map and you can pretty much go wherever you want. To go back to what Chris talked about in regards to the safes, one of the cool things is that sometimes you don't even need to, you don't even need to look for the artifacts to find out what the codes are in certain ways to open them. If you actually know the code, you can go ahead and open them. Of course, you can do a guide, but like there was one point in the game where I ended up in this business gym, and it says, "Oh, the Wi-Fi code is these six numbers," and it was written out, and I was like, "You know what? I bet that's a safe number." And then it turned out that it was, and I was like, "Yeah, this is some really clever stuff." And then, like, you know, in these safes are pretty awesome resources that you can use and things like that. Going back to the argument about the game being a little bit easier, is the fact that, you know, it's a survival horror game. You're pretty much going to deplete your resources. Mm-hmm. But with The Last of Us 2, especially coming off the first one, I felt like, you know, I'm knowledgeable enough to go ahead and craft whatever I need when I need it. And that's always been the case. Like, I've only had, like, two or three cases within the last 25 hours playing the game where I ran out of ammo and I felt like I was fucked. And I spent most of the time in boss battles running around pressing triangle in order to grab stuff, in order to get things out of the way. And once I actually killed whoever I had to kill, I was like, wow, that was actually really rewarding. So, you know, it just based on your preparedness, like, I'm really impressed with how well that went.
Yeah, they do a good job with the crafting and the unlock systems here, where kind of in the original, I played through it kind of mostly maxed out on my various materials, because I didn't use the explosive stuff too much.
Yeah.
And was like, all right, I'm ready to go, just in case something bad happens and I use up my my health kits, I can make a couple more pretty quickly. That kind of thing. It was right till like the last like third of the game where they throw you into a bunch of combat scenarios. And here, so far, they definitely are more sparing with the supplies so far, because you just don't have too much that you can craft. Yeah. Like, I just have like the melee weapon enhancer, the Molotov, and the health kits. It's like, all right, health kits are what I'm doing right now, because just in case. Because they've introduced like new mechanics, like you can crawl prone. And that the infected can also crawl now. They figured that out, I guess. And so that is definitely a thing you have to be concerned about. Before, it's like, all right, they can basically just do, you know, just run at you for the most part. So if you can get away from them, get some space, you can use your gun, or if you've got melee, you can sort of take them out that way, that kind of stuff. But here, especially with the whole sequence where shit goes to hell with the third character that is introduced, that you get to control with Abby, and she gets into some really bad shit. As infected have swarmed around her and meets up with Joel and Tommy. And so there's a whole hell breaking loose there that is really well done.
Very, very tense.
Yeah. definitely.
There is a point where the one that still sticks out with me is the fence.
Where it falls over a bit.
Yeah.
Or at least you like this little tunnel. And yeah, like another mechanic they've added is they've taken the whole squeezing between into like tight spaces as like an actual traversal mechanic where you can kind of get through these areas. Like early on you do it to like get into an RV where the door is kind of mostly closed. That kind of stuff, and they've definitely made that more of a mechanic in like this whole tunnel scenario is like one where you're kind of like, oh, I gotta get through here. And this is fucked because these infected are like on top of the fence.
Yep.
And Abby is like just hoping that it holds long enough for her to get out. That kind of thing. And yeah, it's they've done a lot of cool stuff here.
Yeah, I also want to point out their attention to detail. Like, have you guys already upgraded some of your weapons?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So with the weapon upgrade system, you know, it's as simple as like finding a workbench and choosing your item and using what gear you have to upgrade it. But they've also visually added some cues there where, like, you know, your Ellie will actually put the gun down, and when you choose your upgrade, she'll actually go about the process of cleaning the weapon and adding whatever cartridges and bullets and whatnot. Mm,
yeah.
I thought it was a really nice touch. And you also have the option of zooming in on the weapon so you can see, like, where the gun was made and things like that. And, like, just the world building that it does just based on visual cues and hints is really, really interesting. I saw this tweet that Druckmann retweeted earlier about the amount of detail that went into one of these cutscenes where Ellie takes off her shirt to reveal a whole bunch of bruises. Like, almost in any other game, like, when you see someone take off their shirt, you'll see some sort of clipping, like, you know, like, their hair is going to go through the shirt and things like that. Like, the attention to detail with the animation and sound design is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of good stuff there. I'd definitely say like the weapon stuff is pretty nice. I think I've only had the one chance to upgrade so far in the library, where you kind of have to power the upgrade station. Get the generator and all that, and it works pretty well. They definitely have like refined these upgrade systems so that you can't necessarily do everything all at once. Because I think on the pistol I couldn't upgrade the clip stuff just yet that first time, but I could do that on the rifle that you get. So there's definitely some good stuff there, and so far it seems like the generators are more of a thing this time around than the first game, where the first time around, they're more of a mechanic to bring infected to you. Because, you know, like, okay, once I get this thing powered, there's probably going to be some rush of infected. And here it seems like more like these things are all completely abandoned pretty much at this point, at least. So you're kind of using the power cables to power up these gates to get around, that kind of stuff. And then throwing it over onto the other side once you unlock the door to get this other part of the camp, like, powered up, that kind of stuff. And the cable physics are really well done here. You occasionally have to use ropes to, like, climb up to other areas, and they don't look like most other games where it's just this random thing that just, like, flaps around a bunch because they don't know how to do the physics to look realistic, so just kind of give up at a certain point.
And here their actions are highlighted white.
Yeah. And they do a really good job with that kind of detail of having these cables looking really nice when you kind of climb around. And it's just been a lot of fun so far. It definitely feels like a great evolution of what The Last of Us did well.
Yeah, not only that, but it's pretty much like the super Naughty Dog game. Like, I don't know if you guys played Uncharted The Lost Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that game also had a pretty big open world component that, in my opinion, made it a little bit more impressive than Uncharted 4. Mm-hmm. And now that, you know, Ellie is older, you know, she can do a lot more things physically. Like, she kind of felt like a mini Nathan Drake to me. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and she kind of comes into this with the experience of, you know, with Joel and all that. In the first game, her experience in Left Behind. And they do some really good stuff with that.
The game basically opens up sort of shortly after the events of the first game.
You got Joel talking to Tommy sort of about what happened.
Yeah.
And, yeah, about the big thing where he lies to Ellie about,
the reason.
Her not being the only immune person. And the Fireflies supposedly realizing that there's no means to make a cure.
Yeah, which as it turns out, anybody, if you played the game, you know that's not the case. What happened is, they totally had a weak means of making the cure, but the catch was that it would ultimately end up killing Ellie. So he goes all Papa Bear and decides to basically massacre every last Firefly.
he has a reckoning with his... the death of his daughter, and sort of comes into Ellie's life and kind of realizes that he doesn't have to shut himself off from those kinds of emotions.
Yeah.
And is willing to sort of be her new father figure, like let her be his kind of daughter figure.
Yeah.
Even if they're not blood and flesh and blood related, but he doesn't want to let this one go to like he did his first daughter.
Yeah.
And that's... And then he realizes he doesn't want to sacrifice her.
Yeah.
For the good of the world.
Basically, the first game, it opens, I guess, a couple weeks after that.
They're in the camp, because that's what they found right at the end of the game.
Yeah, and...
Let me ask you guys this. Like, prior to learning about The Last of Us Part II's existence, I know it's going to be different for Chris, because he actually played it for the first time a couple weeks ago with the first game. But I guess with you, Brandon, particularly... did you expect the second one to be announced or a second game to be made?
I expected a second game to be made. I just didn't think it would necessarily revolve around Joel and Ellie as much.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah,
because I, you know, there was the first game did a lot of great world building, and you know, there was definitely more potential for more stories in that particular universe. I just didn't know that they didn't expect them to end up continuing that particular story.
Yeah, I mean, I can go ahead and agree with that notion. I talked about it last week. Like, I'd be completely fine if there was no second game. But given how good Naughty Dog is at telling a story, like, you know, eventually I went ahead and caught on. You know, got the game right away, and I'm totally enjoying what I played. But then going back to the end of the first game, since you guys are pretty much already spoiled it, when you save Ellie from the surgery, or if that's what you want to call it, you know, I know when I played it, I wasn't even trying to kill a doctor. I just wanted to save her. The game didn't give you that option.
And, no, the doctor and then, actually
and like, now it's clear
rushes you with a scalpel.
Yeah.
So you have to kill him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which,
now it's clear why.
Did you guys kill the nurses in that room? Or did you let them go?
I didn't.
The first time I killed them only to see if it was possible. And then I didn't know if it like recollected, so I resetted it and did it again and didn't do that.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I did the thing and these two are not a threat at all.
Yeah. So
let's just get her and let's get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a whole hell of a way to end that game. And I would say definitely with that game, it had pacing issues in a sense where like the first few hours you're kind of very weak as your ability to like take out infected and all that, and you kind of the game just grows and gets better as you get more capable.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the first few hours, like it's the most horror that game ever gets.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of once you become more powerful, you kind of don't have that much of a threat to them from them. But here, they kind of make them more of a threat again because they're able to gang up on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In ways that they kind of don't in the original. It's more just if you don't pay attention to what's going on, you can kind of get ganged up on, but it's more of a, because they don't really throw that many enemies at you in the original. It's like maybe 5, 6, or 7 like that at a time. But here, it definitely seems like they're gonna throw you into some shit.
Mm. Yeah, for, like what it, for what it's worth, does,
but, yeah.
For what it's worth, given my lack of experience in the genre, this is the scariest game I ever played.
Yeah. Yeah, because we haven't, Brandon and I have not seen much in the way of human enemies at this point.
Not quite yet.
Yeah. So we haven't necessarily seen like what they can do outside of the one major event that happens early on.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Like with points in the game where you put your mask on because there's spores, like you know you're gonna go into a fight with a whole bunch of infected, and like you know there'd be points in the game where I'd walk slowly because you know you're gonna walk past a whole bunch of fungi, and then there'll be points where you know the infected just jump out of it and try to get you with their jump scare methods, and I was like, yeah, I don't like going through this a whole lot. It's giving me crazy anxiety, but like you know, pushing through and actually getting through was just so satisfying.
Yeah,
and like it kind of makes me like it's like comparing apples to oranges. But like, I wonder if I should go ahead and try the new Resident Evil 2 after this.
Yeah. You know? So I guess sort of the elephant in the room we kind of have to talk about are those leaks that you know ended up kind of spoiling the game for a lot of people.
Yeah,
or at least
they are.
Yeah, or at least that's what. They claim to be. That's at the point I'm at now. That doesn't really seem to be the case. There is that one major event that they bring up. But that actually happens fairly early on in the game.
Yeah. And that was basically what my stream ended on.
Yeah.
Got to that, I was like, oh. Shit. Okay, well.
It's also, let's just be completely honest, though. It's not really as much of a spoiler you think it is if you've been paying attention to all the reveals up to this point. They've been kind of telegraphing it pretty much since the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of yes, sort of no. Granted, I've actually done a really good job avoiding spoilers, and part of the reason why I'm going through this game as quickly as I am is because as I continue to talk about it, I don't know what people are going to talk about back to me, so I figure I might as well like finish it so I can just be done with it.
Yeah.
And like at least this game actually makes me want to play it a second time, assuming that the ending you know actually lands on its feet properly. Like I've said this about all sorts of types of media, like oh my god, this is the best thing ever, and then the ending happens and I completely hate it. Like How I Met Your Mother, Game of Thrones, those things come to mind, and The Last of Us Part 2, it could happen. I'm not necessarily there yet, but anyway,
I'll like, say based on the original,
just given where I am, I think. I look at comments and then I see certain memes and I'm like, okay, now I understand what this is.
Yeah.
I would say based on the original, I'm expecting them to be ending it pretty well.
Yeah.
Cause they do a good job of like, all right, this is like the end of the journey that these two characters have had.
Yeah.
And they set off, at least a good start here, as we know that this was a revenge tale for Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea who the revenge tale was for, and that's kind of why I stopped really paying attention to much of the trailers or anything like that at a certain point for like the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm already on board for this. I don't need to get any more. You know, it's like when you see like a movie trailer, a game trailer, and you're like, all right, I'm in. Don't need any more trailers. I don't need a way to spoil anything else for me.
Yeah.
Because they don't need to convince me any further.
Yeah. So I want
kind of stuff.
Kind of bring something up because this is, it was, we kind of touched on it because of the events you guys are talking about, but it should be pretty clear to anybody that's like listening that the world of The Last of Us 2 is fucked.
Oh, yeah.
This is, you know, you could call it post-apocalyptic, post-pandemic, whatever you want to call it. But these folks are in the situation that's it's basically way over their heads. They're, and I'm kind of wondering if, well, based on what I've seen, it seems like they're conveying that. But what I'm really wondering is, do you feel like during the times that we're going through right now, this is kind of cathartic for you to go through, or does it seem to be maybe too much?
Well, honestly, I didn't even make that connection because the nature of the quote unquote the pandemic and The Last of Us is actually very, very different from COVID-19. Mostly because, for one thing, it's just the nature of it, first of all. COVID-19 is a virus, but cordyceps are a much more of a biological type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the game shows that, there is life after the epidemic, because a big chunk, like, as the game starts, you spend a lot of basically the beginning of the game in that town that you know they get to in the first game, and it shows you know they've actually rebuilt civilization to an extent and actually created stability
and created a good community that is able to sustain itself with people that are willing to do the work to patrol like outside their town to
that's actually one of the things I loved about the beginning of the game is they show you they got like a whole system built up. There's there's like a series of patrols that they do. They've got these log books at every site where they tell you, you know, if they saw anything. They always go in pairs, and if there is an excess amount they find, they send out a cleanup crew to take care of it. So
and if they don't hear from somebody, like, okay, let's round up people and see what happened.
Yeah,
that's kind of where Joel and Tommy are kind of at. At a certain point.
The main thing we have to keep in mind is that this game does take place quite a few years after the original game. So
about four years or so.
About 4 to 5 years. And like, you know, by then, like a lot of the communities and whatnot have gotten used to the situation where they went ahead and built their own neighborhoods and things like that. Like Joel and Ellie actually live in their own separate houses alone. So that's like a pretty cool thing there. You'll get to a point in the game where another community actually takes over an entire football stadium, and they use their bleachers as like a way to maintain their crops, pass out weapons and things like that. And like a lot of it is like really, really impressive. And like, you know, if unfortunately we do get to some sort of point like that, like at least we have the folks at Naughty Dog who have actually built like their own little world before, and we can have ideas of what it could look like if things were to go awry. Like as far as like making the connections to like what we're seeing today, like I was exploring a building and I saw a sign, a really nice sign that talked about the safeties of wearing a mask, and I was like, oh, okay, that's current. And then you know, with the things happening right now with racism and whatnot, it's really cool seeing the game highlight its diversity. I mean, like as a minority myself, like it's really cool seeing an Asian guy not act like a typical Asian.
Well, because he's I'm pretty sure I'm not entirely convinced, but I think his name's Eugene, isn't it?
Steve?
I'm talking about Jesse.
Jesse.
Eugene's the
hippie dude that's got the huge pot farm underneath his house. Yeah, Jesse, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure, like, Jesse's whole background is that his family were part of the Chinese community near the Mississippi Delta because of his name. Hmm. You know, his first name is Jesse, and that's a very southern name, so... But yeah, it's and then you have Dina herself, and Dina is actually Dina's whole family. Like, you can tell free if you pay attention that she's Jewish, but yeah. If you look at her ethnicity and stuff, it would probably that her family is actually Israeli. Mm-hmm. And you know, because there's like a point in when you're in Seattle, there's a point you actually manage to make your way into a synagogue and. You know, she's like, yeah, this is a synagogue. You can tell because there's like the menorah decorations on the wall, and you go into the rabbi's office, and you can find the Torah in one of the closets. It's like, yeah,
they do a good job with the world building, all that. Like, they build up Eugene as this like father figure. I guess he's passed away at this point.
I'm guessing that because
they
keep
talking about like Ellie and Dina keep talking about you know. How nice and rare it is that people get to die of old age and healthy, and especially Dina's like, Ellie, you better die of old age. Yeah. I don't want to have to shoot you. Just turn into a clicker or whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is like, yeah, these two have a pretty good relationship. And like the start of the game is after Dina breaks up with Jesse. And like immediately after they get drunk at a party and kiss.
Yeah. If you
Jesse's
know,
like,
if you...
I don't really care, whatever, but. You know, just don't do it in front of me. I guess he just doesn't want them to be all lovey-dovey because they do get to a point where they kind of spend a significant amount of time together.
Yeah, and if you're curious, that reveal trailer we saw a while back with the really impressive cutscenes and stuff, where they're at the dance. Yeah, that's what they're talking about. That's the events that happen.
Joel himself also got drunk and. Got a bit too fatherly with them. Mm. I guess that's at least what the aftermath seems like, but yeah. Mm. I assume they'll show that cutscene in whole at a later point.
Yeah.
Probably. And I guess we also have to talk about, because we brought up Abby. So one of the things that the leaks said is that you end up, because they never... Because all of the, you know, because once the leaks came out, there were all these conspiracy theories about how, you know, they ended up cutting stuff from the game, you know, and all this stuff to try and make it like, you know, they were trying to hide something. First of all, I just want to point it out, even though it would not be a problem, Abby is not trans. She's just a very strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, that was a leak?
That was the
misinformation comment portion of the leak.
This is so stupid. Okay.
They also said that, you know, you only play Ellie for like the first half of the game, and then the second half it switches around to Abby. No, that's not how the game happens. It switches between the two fairly regularly. Depending on how their stories, you know, interlock with each other. But yeah, it's that basically what I've discovered by now is the gaming community is assholes, and you know, don't
a lot of bullshit from bigots online, like trying to review bomb the game on Metacritic, the user reviews, to which Neil Druckmann's turned around. It's like. Oh yeah, look at all these review numbers. It's so much higher than the other games we've made. Mm-hmm. This kind of thing. Thank you for your passion, kind of thing, which was pretty good. And then there's been just some awful shit, like suggesting that Neil Druckmann forced a character that looked like him to have sex with Laura Bailey's character so that he could do the acting for that. For that stuff, and she's like, "No, we did that with like professional actors. There's nothing
an actual like,
going on, like forcing her to actually comment on this shit."
Yeah, and actual, mocap too.
Yeah,
like we have the footage from the mocap. Like, this is not even something these guys got to lie about. Why are we?
Yeah. Because
that's not even worth addressing.
Yeah.
Because the gaming community can be idiots.
Yeah.
That way.
So yeah, basically it was a bunch of hullabaloo about nothing. And
yeah. And the whole, like, Joel looks a little bit different from the first game, which is because it's been, like, 5 years later. like, that they're, like, emasculating him, and it's like, no.
Like, no, he's grown dude, as a he's, character. Like, middle-aged, dude. It's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
That's what he's, happens when you get to be that age. You start.
He's grown as a character where he doesn't have to carry everything,
mm-hmm.
Like, a community all on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can rely on other people and not have to be the only one doing things, so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell he gets to fucking relax and live, and he's just in his house fucking carving out, like,
making guitars and stuff.
Yeah. Stuff like yeah. that.
And yes, the guitars are actually, like, a
mechanic.
A gameplay element, yes.
Yeah, you can play them, apparently.
Yeah.
And you can turn back time with guitars.
Yep. So, yeah, so yeah, but as far as I'm saying, yeah, it's a great game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely worth playing. It's actually longer than the first game, too.
Much yeah. longer.
Yeah, it's like 26 hours at minimum.
Hmm.
Yeah, probably depending on how much you go looking around all the nooks and crannies.
Which
yeah.
is exactly what I'm doing, because you'll want to do that. There's a lot of neat stuff hidden there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you find lots of little weird notes and stuff. Like, if you've seen the... There's one early on in that little town by the grocery store, the kids... writing to Santa for a dog to help his dad fight the monsters.
Yeah.
And on the back, he's like, oh, can you also get me a gun so I can help my dad fight the monsters? It's like, yeah. God damn it.
Yeah. The game also has a much better trophy list. There's nothing mm-hmm. difficulty related. Yeah. Most of the trophies is like, oh, get all of these. And the game also made it easier because you can also go back to any specific point within the chapter, and it also tell you how many... artifacts, hits, and all those stuff, things there are. And you can yeah. also turn up the accessibility so that they can go ahead and shine a different color. So you can bet that after yeah. I finish the game, I'm going to go ahead and finish it again.
I think they also have an option that it'll just tell you if you find a collectible, like, oh, you found this on a previous playthrough.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
I did not know that. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yes, there's so like again, there are collectibles you can get. And if you remember in the first game, like one of the big collectibles was that comic book series that Ellie really likes.
Yeah.
That, oddly enough, ends up kind of paralleling the story of the game itself.
Yeah, I love the way Joel found those, because he's like, oh, Ellie, I found another one of those comics you like.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you know, she's not even anywhere close, and it's like, oh, is your dad just yelling, I found a comic you like, That's real funny kind of stuff,
yeah.
the way he does that in the first game, but yeah.
But
one last random thing I want to ask you guys is the trading cards. Do you think mm-hmm. that's foreshadowing for their next game?
I have actually, been honest, I actually thought that Savage Starlight was going to be the foreshadowing for their next game.
That would be awesome. Whatever they want to do with superheroes, right.
I think they're just like making these like side things to fill up the world. Like, they had the Twilight-esque movie that was in the original, which
yeah.
is
yeah.
didn't sound like it from the title, but then Ellie's like, well, what's this one about? Does he rip her throat out? And she's like, no, they just kind of vampires that fall in love. Oh. That's stupid.
That's not how vampires
she very much doesn't okay. like what society was before.
But the idea of them like putting elements in there of like hinting at what their next project is, I mean, there is precedent to that when it comes to Naughty Dog. They've been doing that pretty much, I think, since Jack and Daxter. Because they first started hinting at what Uncharted was going to be in, I think, the last Jack and Daxter game, and they first... made hints about The Last of Us in Uncharted 3, so...
Yeah. Yeah, and also, kind of speaking of that, they have PS3s in the game.
Yeah.
Copies of Uncharted, at least 1 and 2 in the Jack and Daxter collection I've seen.
Yeah.
I think a Vita in there as well.
Yeah, and they do have, like, a whole, like, comic books things that they've created that you can find in the game.
Yeah.
That, again, have to do with those trading cards you find. Because, you know, Ellie's got a bunch of them in her room, and you see them in, you know, Eugene's place, like, yeah.
The best thing is when you actually come across the Vita and you shoot it, nothing happens to it. So mm-hmm. Vita lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have stood up to that sort of whole idea of, like, this ended up happening during the PS3 generation, because there are no PS4s to be fine. Yeah.
Because PS4 didn't happen, just kind of society stopped at 2013.
Hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So, there's no PS3 Slim either.
Yeah.
No. It's all fat. It's still the old-fashioned, like...
It's the fats weird... that all died because they were backwards compatible.
Yeah. Which might be something of a slight at Sony, too, if you think about it.
Hmm. Really useless.
Yeah. But, yeah, so point is, it's a great game. Go play it. Just... FYI, yes, the violence really is as intense as people have been saying it is, sometimes to troubling degrees.
Yeah.
But it fits with the universe, and it's not gratuitous. It has to do with the story. So.
Yeah, I feel like that's one thing that was very hard to get across in the trailers and the reveals, because you're looking at that one slice.
Uh-huh.
But when you're in the context of the world, it probably makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and, it does.
Yeah.
And all those leaks were mostly bullshit.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of it is out of context too.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Stay tuned. My review should be out either tomorrow or the next day.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, Last of Us Part 2, great game, and worth the getting if you have a PS4. So, all right. So let's move on to the EA Play Live that happened over the week.
By the way, it's the game Last of Us Part 2. Despite what the naysayers wanted, it is smashing sales records. So it is also selling like gangbusters.
Yeah. No.
So they could just die mad.
Small vocal minority of, So here we are back to EA, because they had their little, what was supposed to be part of their E3 thing, but it's because of COVID-19 and all that stuff, we're in a really weird time. They did their event, and they showcase the kind of stuff that you'd expect them to. They started off with Apex Legends announcing that they're doing a new season of that, new characters, stuff like that. It's coming to the Switch for some reason.
Yeah, Steam and Switch with cross-play support, they're finally embracing that.
Yeah.
Which is very nice.
Yeah, they're embracing that. They got, Command & Conquer is out on Steam now, so you can get that if you want to. What else did they announce? They had an interesting video about, the people who were, a diverse set of people playing The Sims 4, I like the sentiment that the video is trying to convey, because I'm sure, the sentiments that, these people are, talking about are all genuine to them. The problem is it's being presented at an EA event, and it's kind of hard to really believe that EA actually values that.
You would want to think that after the absolute dumpster fire that was Star Wars, that game, them actually having to get a very nasty phone call from the CEO of Disney, that they have learned their lesson.
Hmm. Maybe. We're not seeing anything too egregious so far, so perhaps...
you can cross your fingers and hope, but...
Yeah, but, FIFA is going to still have all of the stuff in it. And I don't think that's going to ever change, so we'll see. Speaking of, we did see next-gen FIFA and Madden previews, sort of.
Not too much, but definitely felt like this was a weird show to have in light of Sony and Microsoft showing off games and such. And EA's like, we got FIFA and Madden, and here's a montage of tech demo stuff. We got nothing else ready for the first year or so of this. These new consoles.
Yeah.
So, it's like they got caught flat-footed.
Yeah. Either that or they've made deals with, Microsoft or Sony to show the stuff at their particular events, so that kind of leaves them out in the cold, but which wouldn't be the first time that has happened before, so it's hard to tell.
It's a weird show for that, because also they just... They announced a bunch of EA original stuff, and those all seem to be just current gen and PC only.
Yeah.
Where you're like, okay, I guess that's a way you could go. I'm surprised these aren't announced for the other platforms.
Yeah.
which is weird. But yeah, they had the new game from Joseph Ferris called It Takes Two.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm just going to say Joseph Ferris, he's got a thing for cooperative stuff because everything he's done so far has been with that premise in mind.
It'll serve him well.
Yeah.
They've also been good games. So he's definitely like one of the quote-unquote masters of it.
Yeah.
But this guy is very likable to me. Fuck the Oscars.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a weird like WWE-style like video promoting him for all of this stuff. Where it's like, you could have just gone straight to him. Like, you don't need to sit here and hype him up and announce this like emotional platformer kind of thing. It's like, I don't see how that necessarily enhances what's going on, but whatever. But yeah, that'll be out next year. Current consoles and all that. They announced a new game from Zoink Games, makers of Stick It to the Man, Zombie Vikings, and a bunch of other stuff, called Lost in Random.
Yeah.
Which very much is in their vibe, their style. It's kind of a 3D action adventure game where it features a girl and her, like, dice buddy.
Yeah.
Who
it was very Tim Burton / Box Trollsy.
Yeah.
Like the look.
It did look really cool. I'm just wondering about the consensus around here, whether dice as a singular word is correct.
Mm-hmm. No, it's die.
Yeah. Because they made that mistake twice in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They got time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be out next year as well. And then they announced a new game from Final Strike Games called Rocket Arena.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
which was kind of a neat looking game that I'm not sure people realize you could just call a game Rocket Arena. So people are like, wait, we could just do that?
Especially since there was a mod for Quake 3 called Rocket Arena. So
yeah. Mm. It's a 3v3 multiplayer game, hero shooter that's the primary weapon is a rocket launcher.
Mm-hmm.
They have a variety of, I think, 10 characters that you can play as.
Yeah.
They have their own ways they use that stuff for attacks beyond just the pure just shoot it at the dude type thing. But and they also promoted like a whole like progression system, I guess, for it, where you can kind of flesh out your character's abilities and such over as you play them more.
Yeah.
So it seems like they'll have some reward stuff for continuing to play with these characters and kind of evolving them a bit. That'll give them just being kind of a stale game, but that is out the 14th, July 14th.
Yeah.
That game was originally supposed to be published by Nexon, which I work near. And there was an event where I actually played the game at. And it was a lot of fun. But, they weren't even affiliated with EA back then. So this is totally an interesting project. But,
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it'll take off the way like Overwatch did. But like it was definitely a fun one, right? It kind of felt like Power Stone meets a hero shooter.
Yeah,
it's also kind of confusing. Like, is this a paid game? Is it free to play? It seems like it should be free to play, but
it looks like they're going for the same model as Apex. So it's whether it's
I don't think they really mentioned.
They didn't say anything
about
it at all. So,
but they do have a page on their site that says pre-order Rocket Arena.
So yeah,
but I don't know
what that means.
Like what the pre-order is. Let's see. Yeah, Steam. Oh, okay, pre-order Rocket Arena Standard Edition for $30, $40 for the Mythic Edition.
So it's not a full price game, but it's a game that you buy.
Yeah. Mythic Edition includes, let's see, 4 outfits, 2 trails, rocket fuel, currency, and an outfit for one of the other characters.
Oh, great.
Seems like they're trying to do Rocket League, but Overwatch.
Hmm.
Mm.
Because that is also kind of a 3v3 thing. And the way that they're priced in this kind of makes it seem like they're trying to be in that kind of line.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to pan out the way that Rocket League has.
Hmm.
It's also a 30 gig game.
So far.
It's fairly sizable. So that'll be interesting to see how that does and how maybe how quickly it'll get onto EA Access, which they say is coming to Steam later this year.
Yeah.
Kind of wild that they're because they had the whole Sims thing, like oh yeah, we'll have Sims on Steam
eventually.
Where it's like, Yeah, but that's Sims 4 has been on PC for years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, it's also coming to PC. There's people are like expecting to be Switch.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the Switch stuff, they also announced that they're going to have 7 games coming to the Switch over the next year, which Burnout Paradise just released for $50 on the Switch.
Oy.
That's the first one. And that was like a... All right. I think Apex Legends is one of those. I think Lock in Random is another. That was confirmed after the show that was also coming to Switch. And I would assume FIFA gets another version for this year.
Yeah, maybe not a legacy version, but an actual good one.
I think it's just going to be legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Frostbite still isn't on the Switch at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what else they would have. Like, Sims would seem like that would probably be a thing that would happen, but they haven't announced it yet.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense for the Switch, especially with the...
I think Unravel's the other game that's been confirmed.
Yeah.
That's been rated for Switch, and they only have the sequel on there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like there's still a couple more, but they didn't really announce anything specific. Just kind of said, "Hey, we got actual support for the Switch."
Yeah,
you know, 3 years later,
hooray!
Yeah. And they also announced that they've got games in development from BioWare, from Motive, from Criterion, from DICE. Mm-hmm. And they didn't tell us what any of those were.
It's like next gen,
real teases.
Yeah, it's like. Well, here's the Criterion, which apparently Criterion, they just folded Ghost Games back into Criterion.
Yeah.
So whatever Criterion was before plus
Ghost Games,
which, yeah. It was wild kind of watching this when they were talking about the crossplay stuff and Need for Speed. He got a shout-out because they're adding crossplay to that.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool.
So it'll be like 45 players playing it now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, that's an EA Access fodder game at this point. Mm. That's the only people that are playing it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I hope they get through that. They didn't confirm for Madden or FIFA, I don't think.
Yeah.
Just Apex so far, and like Squadrons, Star Wars Squadrons has it. So they're getting there and making more progress than some of the other publishers out there are.
Yeah. So I'm actually starting to wonder if EA is not getting tired of Origin.
I think they're realizing that they don't have to be just confined to Origin.
Because
they've been working with GOG for quite a while, putting their older stuff on there.
Yeah.
And so I think they've kind of realized, like, Origin has its audience and its limitation for that. And
yeah.
That Steam isn't necessarily the competitor that it was. It wasn't like a tooth and nail thing. They can kind of, especially because Steam, like, up there or lower their take for games that sell over a certain amount. So they're more friendly to the bigger publishers, and so I imagine EA probably got a good deal with Steam that probably ensures that they're going to get more of a percentage than the average publisher would. That just makes it much easier and less contentious of a relationship.
Yeah.
Especially because they're bringing their subscription service over, too.
Yeah. So one of the other big ones that we saw was Star Wars Squadrons. Kind of thought that this was going to be like a Rogue Squadron type game. No, it's more in the line of the old flight sims that they had, you know, X-Wing TIE Fighter, X-Wing Alliance, those kind of games.
Yeah, it was very nice looking, especially this being their kind of first VR game. The cockpits definitely look like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had to make them fully modeled, which is great for the people that want, you know, the first-person cockpit shooter game.
Yeah.
And also great for VR, because the little, like, demo level they did for the first Battlefront for PSVR and all that was really well done. Yeah. You could, like, pull down the little visor thing that shows you, like, the distance, but it didn't really do anything. It was just a thing you could do, flick down, like, oh, here's, like, little gizmos and such you could mess with in the cockpit, which they're playing that up with some of the unlocks. Like, oh, you can get little bobblehead dolls to put in your cockpit, like an Ewok. Because I'm sure in the Star Wars universe, there are lots of people like, I like those Ewoks so much, I've got a bobblehead. Like the way that, like, I don't know, truck drivers here in this country would have, I don't know, whatever kind of thing they had. But yeah, there's like a lot of like cosmetic stuff. They seem to be tying it into Star Wars lore a lot because there are a lot of characters that get brought up from the various shows and such, the other material that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
The way they're tying this stuff in. It's going to be a $40 game. PlayStation VR, PC VR, PS4, Xbox One, PC, all that stuff, cross-play between them all. It seems like it's going to be a pretty good package.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's out October 2nd.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm sort of on defense for this one because, you know, like Phil said, I thought it would be like kind of like Rogue Squadron, and we'd see some third-person dogfights. They didn't show any of that in gameplay, so I'm not holding out hope for that. But it looks good. I just don't know if it's for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll wait and see. There like one more thing at the end of it was they're saying, "Hey, we're bringing back Skate." A couple of very excited dudes were saying that they're bringing back Skate.
Like, you can shut up now. We're making it.
Yeah. So, yeah, they didn't show anything. They didn't even show a damn logo. It was like... It
seems like a recent deal they signed, so they haven't really started anything yet.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the stuff shown here is like, oh, this will be a while out, so...
Yeah.
Stay tuned. This was definitely the coolest announcement, but, you know, given the way that it was presented, it probably should have been in the middle or the beginning.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as far as, like, the whole thing goes... This was probably the best EA play that's ever happened. Granted, there isn't that much of a sample size, and it's not saying much at all.
Yeah.
But
it's because they didn't have an audience to play up to.
Yeah.
And have like influencers like, hey, here's this guy, like some of you might not have heard of, playing Need for Speed, like talking about how awesome Need for Speed is.
Yeah.
Even though most everybody's fairly conflicted about whether it's going to actually be good or not.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah, it's... Like, not having the audience and having them having to play up an audience outside of just having Greg Miller there to host the studio segments.
Yeah.
That's like the where they could just kind of focus on the content and people talking about that stuff.
Yeah.
I am really interested in all of the EA originals, though. That's been the main thing ever since they started doing EA Play that's caught my interest. And there hasn't really been an EA original where I didn't like. So, you know, it would be nice if there was more of an emphasis and, like, they did more of those more frequently. But as a whole, yeah, it was solid. I thought it was pretty stupid that they said that, oh, yeah, we're going to have 7 Switch games, including these two, by the end of the year. And then after that, they never mentioned it again.
Nope.
But, you know.
Yeah. Like, hey, we're going to have 7 things. You're going to have to do a lot of work to figure out what those 7 are.
Yeah.
Because, like these random letters we just hit around in the Greg Miller shots.
Yeah.
You can put those in and you might win a Steam.
Yeah, they were all for Steam. And, like, you know, Apex being on the Switch is actually really, really huge. But I see no reason why The Sims isn't on here.
I have to assume if it's not actually going to happen, it's just... pure resource intensive.
Yeah.
Because on the consoles, it works pretty well, but yeah, it can be a little bit slow to load, and I imagine the Switch would be just a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, but I assume people would still tolerate just have Switch on there, the Sims on there, so who knows. But
yeah,
it felt like a good show, just weirdly, oddly placed after the Sony showing for the PS5, where it's like, hey, we got nothing to announce for the PS5 or Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
We're only living in the present right now. Except for this one montage of shiny cars and a tree and stuff like that. It's like all text demo stuff that nobody really cares about until there's actual announcements to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But since they announced Skate 4, I'll still hold out hope for a road patch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe next year we'll have a couple of other excited people.
Burnout 4 would be nice.
Yeah. Well, they did say Criterion's going to be doing something, so who knows?
Yeah, but, you know, they gave them the Need for Speed license, along with the developers.
Yeah.
So, hey, take them. We got nothing else for them.
We don't know what to do with them, so, yeah. Anyways.
All right.
So let's move on to some bad news.
Well, not really bad news. It's just maybe slightly
irritating?
Inconvenient.
Inconvenient?
I called this.
Mildly annoying?
I said... Don't trust the dates for Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah. At least they followed it up with good news.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Cyberpunk 2077, which was originally going to come out in September, has been pushed back to November.
November 9th.
Which is like, okay, just another 2 months, whatever.
Yeah, like, I assume the week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
For the week so basically it makes it something for, you know, the Christmas, the holidays.
Potential, like, it'll be out right around the launch of the new consoles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
and on top of that, that means that when the game comes out, there's also going to be a next-gen specific upgrade that will come with it.
Next year.
Yeah, the next-gen update is coming next year. But the next-gen version will look better just from the get-go. But it won't be, like, fully optimized or taking advantage of what the Series X or PS5 have to offer yet. That's going to be coming next year. Kind of buried in that news was that it's going to be backwards compatible, so you buy one, then you're going to get it on both. So,
it's, also, I had to criticize there. Kind of. Hmm. Yeah, we still don't quite know a ton about how that stuff's going to work on both of them.
Yeah.
It's something we're just going to have to, I guess, see it in action.
Yeah.
Their announcements, I get that black and yellow is their color scheme, but they put, like, fairly thin text font over a bright white background. It's like you have to, like, get super close. Like, okay, I can see it now.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, you guys need to do, like, a bold font. Like,
I can't read any
learn
of that.
How this stuff works. Yeah. It's like, even just trying to look at it, like, in the typical Twitter view, like, you can't read the text easily from that without, like, zooming it in. It's like, you guys need to do black with yellow text. That's much easier for most people.
Yeah.
And way more cyberpunky. Like,
yeah. But yeah, it's a delay, but it's not as significant a delay as the first one was.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it just means now the game's in play for the holiday season. And you know what? I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
that's probably what we'll be playing during the holidays anyway. So
Yeah. I still have the review slot for myself. So
that's you.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So move on to a quick one. The Messenger is coming to Xbox One on the 25th. I'm kind of surprised that it wasn't there already. But
it's been on everything. PC Game Pass. So
yeah, that's what surprised me. I just assumed it had been there all along.
Yeah.
Nope.
But yeah, this seems like another.
I don't know if that is good.
Yeah, it's very good.
Real good. So, it's, the closest thing we have to a modern 2D Ninja Gaiden game, so, yeah.
Pretty much,
yeah.
With some Shinobi mixed in.
Yeah, worth
checking. Featuring a character who's doesn't give a shit about any of that.
Yeah.
He's kind of lazy.
The laziest ninja ever. So, next up we got weird news, I guess. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time trailer images leaked. So we're leaking images of trailers that haven't released yet now.
Yeah.
This is a thing that we're doing.
The game is by Toys for Bob, the people who basically redid the whole Spyro trilogy top to bottom.
Yeah.
So it's definitely in good hands.
Yeah.
And this is a very good title for this game.
Yeah.
It's About Time.
Because it is about time, but it's also about
time.
And then we got a proper fourth game that instead of all these weird things that Vivendi did after they got control of the IP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff Keighley's going to be hosting an event tomorrow at 11 Eastern, so we'll actually be able to see that particular trailer and probably maybe a bit more info on it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bottom line, it's more Crash. That's a good
thing.
Yeah. If you played the remastered, the Insane Trilogy, and you really liked those and you want more, don't play any of the other stuff that came after it because those suck. Play the wait for this one. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So are they still going to be going with the sort of whole the whole formula of it being, basically just Sonic's ass, basically, from just a straight ahead forward path? Like, are they still sticking with that? Or
that would be ideal, but who knows?
Tune in tomorrow, Brandon.
Yeah, we'll find out tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah. You want Pokemon Snap? Because it's coming to the Switch.
Yeah, new Pokemon Snap.
I'm actually
surprised it's taken them this long to make another one of these.
20 years. That's insane.
So, yeah.
This one obviously is going to be huge for Pokemon fans, where fans, like, you know, back when it was initially, like, going crazy. And, like, this one is not a remake. It's just, it's a totally new game with a whole bunch of new Pokemon in it. I don't know what the format will be, but it looks like more of the same. And I think that's exactly what people wanted. It would have been perfect on the Wii U, but seeing as how no one got one of those, let's not consider that. But yeah, this one looks pretty solid. We just don't know when it comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They show like a shot of like the vehicle that your character drives, which looks like a little bit like the bubble vehicles from Jurassic World.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously you're not going to get stomped by Pokemon, assumedly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a pretty neat way to kind of capitalize on Pokemon Go and all that, where they've introduced these Pokemon, both old and new, to people. And like, as I described to some Pokemon fans, like, it's an on-rail shooter, but you're just taking pictures.
Yeah.
So it's going to be weird, but it's kind of a perfect kind of Pokemon game.
Yeah. Other Pokemon news, we got a little announcement of Pokemon Cafe Cafe Mix, which is a mobile free-to-start puzzle game. Mobile and Switch, but... Yeah.
Yeah, it's... On the Switch, it's going to be handheld only, because they're very weird about it with games like this. Yeah, it's free-to-play. I think you can technically pre-order it now on the Switch. So it'll just preload it for when it releases, I think the 23rd, come up here in a couple days. So yeah, that should be, and from the gameplay it shows, it's kind of just Pokemon heads that are kind of filling up this like box, and you're kind of, I assume, picking the ones that are next to it, next to each other that are the same.
Yeah.
I don't know, but if you need a puzzle game and you like Pokemon, and you got some time, I guess, you can play this. Yeah.
It's a free-to-play puzzler. I wouldn't be excited for it.
Yeah.
Next up, Square Enix announced Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memories. That's that little rhythm game that Dan was talking about earlier.
This is the one Kingdom Hearts game I'm actually excited for, guys. This is going to be the best one.
Yeah, it has 140 songs in it.
Ooh.
I was looking at the announcement I got. Yeah, it's coming out 2020, Switch, PS4, Xbox One. Yeah, it'll be also bring its own story to it, because of course, 140 musical characters, 20 musical tracks, 20 characters. And yeah, it plays a journey through iconic Disney worlds, joined forces with recognizable Disney characters. I wonder if it's going to have Disney songs in it or just Kingdom Hearts songs. Mm-hmm. But,
or both.
Yeah, it says alongside timeless tracks from Disney's cinematic classics.
Okay.
And so don't stream this or put it on YouTube ever.
No, because you'll get the SEA.
Ever.
It says it's got engaging single player content, invites players to enjoy, has online multiplayer.
Because
that's what you want out of a rhythm game, is online multiplayer.
Yeah.
It seems.
Yeah.
I guess tomorrow they're releasing another Kingdom Hearts game for mobile called Kingdom Hearts Dark Road, which has a new original story. Card-based gameplay mechanics within Disney Worlds. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a card battler.
Yeah.
Kingdom Hearts.
No, semi off topic. Earlier this month, Phil challenged us to a social media challenge called the 30-Day Video Game Music Challenge. Where each day you have to choose a different song or game and go ahead and highlight it. And like one of the days it's pretty fun. So thanks, Phil. We'll go ahead and post it on this if you guys want. But anyway, like one of them is pick a song from a game that you don't like. Yeah, mine was Traverse Town because Game Heart sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I had to do that. I'm still doing it over on Twitter, so check that out. Today's was music that reminds you of frustration or something like that. So,
This one I'm actually thinking about. I haven't chosen one yet.
Mine was the running out of air music from Sonic 2.
Oh, that's a good one.
So there's that. A few days ago, it was music from a game that was released the year you were born. I'm sorry, guys, I can't answer that one.
I can, but it's very slim pickings. Yes.
You know, we can actually, like, have a podcast theme one day, just, you know, going over a full week of what these are.
Yeah.
But anyway, tangent.
Yeah, tangents are fun. But yeah, let's get on to the last couple of items for the day. Freebie here, Injustice Gods Among Us, the Ultimate Edition you can get for free right now. It's available on the PS4, so PS Store, Steam, and the Xbox 360 through backwards compatibility, so you can go ahead, click through the links and get them all if you want.
Pretty good fighting game there.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of DC things about the story. So.
Story, yeah.
Good for Jedi.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah.
It was.
No, I can't compete. So,
yeah, if you don't like all the loot and microtransaction stuff for the sequel, this one's a good game to play.
Yep.
Kind of doesn't have most of that stuff.
Yep. So, and finally, in line with the itch.io bundle that happened about a week or so back. Humble Bundle's getting in on the act. They're doing a bundle for racial justice as well. This one is $30 minimum buy-in. But you get 48, 49 games and a bunch of books.
Yeah, wow. It's raised about $3.4 million so far. Ends in just under 2 days. So you got a few more days to get it, but it has a ton of really good games. And even some big name stuff here. Like there's Baba's You, Hyperlight Drifter. You can get Jackbox Party Pack 4, which I think is... okay, no, it's not the one I was thinking of. Because there's one that has like a really cool... essentially like hip-hop game where you're just writing rhymes to diss on the other player that you're facing, that kind of stuff, which is pretty cool. So there's Spelunky, Football Manager 2020, Kerbal Space Program, NBA 2K20. These are all Steam games. Titan Quest Anniversary Edition, Observer, Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, not Transformed, or Team Sonic Racing. They gave you the first one of those. There's FTL, Bioshock Remastered, This War of Mine, Endless Space Collection, Armello, Surviving Mars, Overlord 2, Age of Wonders 3, Kingdom Classic, the first of those Kingdom games that Teresa likes, Eastside Hockey Manager, Goner, The Ball, Company Heroes 2, Overgrowth, Super Time Force Ultra, System Shock Enhanced Edition, and System Shock 2, Broken Age. Let's see, there's a bunch of other stuff here. Knights of Pen and Paper 2, Vertiginous Golf, Starcrossed, Earth Knights, which is a fairly recent indie game, Elite Dangerous, Neo Cab, another indie game that came out recently. And for whatever reason, there's a DLC for Darkest Dungeon, The Shield Breaker.
Yeah.
The game isn't in there. Yeah. They also have a bunch of books in here, like Attack on Titan Anthology. There's a Ghost in the Shell book. Yeah. Shaft, a book there. Some that are tied to Black History, like Black History in its own words. 12 Years a Slave. The Man Who Cried I Am. Black Women in Science. And a good bit of other stuff here. Even one that is the Rust programming language book. A lot of good stuff here for $30. Definitely well worth checking out.
A lot of these are 2K, so they seem to be kind of on board with this.
Them and Sega and some of these others here, but yeah. Also, I think you get a free month of Humble Choice for new subscribers.
Yeah.
So yeah, the charities they have here is like the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Race Forward, and the Bail Project. So you can divvy it up between them, all three, or put it all towards one, or whatever way you want to divvy it up. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's going to be it for this week. Like I said, bit of a quiet week because of the holiday and, you know, whatever else is going on in the world right now. But yeah, we got through it. So I'd like to remind everybody, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so at anchor.fm/dayzerooupdate. Go over there and hit that subscribe button and get us delivered straight into your device choice. You can also check out smashpad.com, where we're going to have our review of Last of Us 2 is going to go up in the next couple of days. So and once Dan Reb gets that all polished up, that'll be in there. And yeah. So for Patrick Mifflin, Brandon Perkins, Chris Sologi, and Dan Reb Victoria, I've been Filippo D'Adolfo, and we'll see you next week.